T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Here it comes. Drive to left. Grand slam time.
Len Casper.
That's win.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, baby.
TV voice of the Cubs.
And one other question about Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Does he still qualify for the Wookiee of the Year?
Slightly above average bassist.
Len Casper playing against us. Really into it.
Len Casper.
That's win.
With Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Len Casper joins us live now on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. The Cubs TV voice is on Twitter, at Len Casper. And here with us at Smoke Daddy, as the weather is starting to clear for enough time for the Cubs to get most of this game in, we believe. Hello, Len. How are you?
I'm great, Dan. Connor, good to see you guys. Yeah, I think it should just warm up as the day moves along. And it sounded to me like we should be just fine.
There's always a window, right? I mean, that's the...
Turn your mic on.
Yeah, that's thanks, Len. Appreciate it. What would I do without you stopping
there
by?
There you go.
I'm always here to help out the host.
Len Casper stops by, tells me to turn the microphone on. Yeah, there's always a window. That's what they say. We were talking about John Lester and his start yesterday. Bump in the road, and he says he's very uncomfortable, doesn't really know what he's doing on the mound. Pitching is the thing.
What does that mean?
Yeah, how do you take John Lester's self-adjustments after watching him for a couple of years?
What's interesting, I look at the last two starts as a bump in the road, but his comments after the game sounded like he thought it was more than that. He's just giving up too many hits. I think that's the thing. And for him, you know, ultimately it's a similar story to Kyle Hendricks in that they work the edges. They try not to find the middle of the plate. They have to get certain calls for strikes in big moments. And when they have to find more of the plate and they don't get those calls, they struggle. And I think that's pretty simple. Joe talked about maybe the way his pitches were shaped a little bit and they may have been flat the last couple of starts. I'm not an expert on that stuff. I will just say that he was probably due a little bit of a correction.
Sure.
After putting up a 116, I think, over his first 7 starts. So I'm not concerned about him, and if he is... I take him at his word.
I'm troubled by the Cubs' lack of velocity. Period. Paragraph. Other teams have it. I turn on the TV and people are blowing people away, and the Cubs don't. You can't live like this. You can't live for 6 months hoping for a fantastic defense and low batting average of balls in play and everything it takes. The Cubs are playing a different game, and they're playing a higher risk game.
I agree with that. I think you can get away with it with your starting pitching because of the experience, the savvy, all of that stuff. And your stuff guy has gotten a little bit better, but has been kind of your fifth guy, right? Yu Darvish. The other four have been much better.
That's why Chatwood stands out.
Yes, and that's why I was going to say the bullpen part of the equation, you need a couple of monster arms, and that's why Carl Edwards Jr. becomes so important, because he's one of the two or three stuff guys in that bullpen. I would have to believe they're going to go out and get somebody else at some point down the road. How far down the road, we don't know, because now with this hard deadline at the end of July, it could be sooner than later.
How did they get here? How did the Cubs and all of these brilliant baseball minds get on the wrong side of the velocity curve?
Well, I think it's probably the way they've drafted. They have really stuck to their plan generally of position players in the high rounds. And kind of poaching pitchers from other organizations. Dylan Maples is another guy who you would love to be a part of this mix, and I know on your show we've talked about him over and over again, and he could be a factor down the road. But, yeah, you look at most other bullpens, and there are 3 or 4 guys who regularly hit 98, and it is pretty scary.
When Wilson Contreras is evaluated as a defensive catcher, obviously there's kind of a wide variety of opinion on him because of what he does do framing, what he doesn't do, his ability to control the run game, his athleticism and whatnot. Do you have any sense, though, that he's willing, or the organization is willing, or seeing the outfield as a possibility for him to give them more versatility as the season goes on?
Yes. I talked to Joe about this very issue a couple days ago, and I think he would be willing mainly to give him a break, a little bit of a rest. I call it the Buster Posey plan, but it would be outfield, not infield. I absolutely think maybe against a tough lefty, you take either Schwarber or Hayward out of the lineup. You put Contreras in. And I think it's about two things. Three things, really. It's him not having to catch every day. His bat is so good that you don't want to take it out of the lineup. And Victor Caratini, guys, has been really intriguing. So to get him in the mix a little bit more. It also could put in play possibly having a third catcher if you use Contreras 2 or 3 days a week at another position. And then that gives Joe flexibility in so many other areas. Mark Zagunas is not getting a ton of at-bats right now, and I do wonder if we get to a point where they're going to want him to get more regular at-bats at AAA.
Victor Caratini is worth a little bit more discussion here because we just sort of glossed over that. I watched him pretty closely as a framer, and he's getting better. I don't have the stats in front of me, but it looks like he's got a better command. I'm not sure if this a Hotovy thing about pitch tunneling. I know Hotovy really believes that there is a way you can square up to receive a pitch that's become noticeable with Caratini.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I trust Mike Borzello, who's as good a catching instructor as anybody in the game, and I think both guys have improved a lot just by being around Mike. I think Victor has made strides. You have two catchers who were infielders, and in Contreras' case, an outfielder. So this is not their natural position. And to go back to Contreras for a second, Connor, I talked with Ben Davis, former big league catcher, who
was in the studio the other day.
Yeah, good guy. Second overall pick in, I think, the 95 draft, maybe. Was really good defensively. And in that draft, they said best defensive catcher since Dale Murphy. Now, he didn't hit in the big leagues, but he was known for his defense. And he got Bob Brenly pretty upset.
That was the bunt that broke up the no-hitter.
Correct. He bunted to break up a no-hitter against the Diamondbacks. But he watches catching a lot, and he said the athleticism of Contreras is off the charts. He might be the best thrower in the majors. But he said the one thing is those pitches to the right-handed batter at the inside part of the plate or away from a lefty. And he said Hamels does it a lot. Lester does it a lot. He said that's where Wilson really struggles in the framing game. So if you're watching the game, where he says he needs to improve the most is the glove side. And that is, you know, instead of kind of pulling that ball over, is to kind of keep it right
there.
Keep that hand steady. So watch for that.
If you looked at the numbers surrounding Jason Hayward's start, where he was hitting, and you had other guys
just calling up, were you noticing I was doing that over here?
No, I didn't. I saw the numbers. I see the downward turn in the numbers from here. That's the upsetting part. The things looked real. His exit velocities, his launch angles, the consistency of contact, it all looked like Jason Hayward had made sizable changes. It's dropped off. He went through a 10 for 50. Do the Cubs have faith that he can return to some of the output that he'd had in the first 3 weeks?
It's a great question. It's been a weird start. I loved what he did yesterday when he got on base 4 times with walks. We saw him briefly lead off. The one thing about this offense in general I like is when guys do go through slumps, they take their walks. Schwarber's done it. Rizzo's done it. Hayward has done it. I would just say this about Hayward. I think the good news is, even when he has struggled, some of his hits have been in really key moments. I thought early the 3 week stretch where everything was just going right, that was going to come back to earth. I didn't expect it to go as far down as it did, but just maybe somewhere in the middle would probably be fine.
To put some numbers on it, between March and April, sort of the first half of this period, he was slashing .309, .426, .506. With a weighted runs created plus of 148. So 48%
better
on offense than the average MLB player over that time. In May, he's batting .160. His on-base is .276. He's slugging .267. His weighted runs created plus is 48.
Right, so when you add it all up, it's about average, right?
It's a 102 weighted runs created plus. That's not good, though, to have it be feast and famine the way it's been.
What have you seen out of Addison Russell?
It's still not quite there offensively. I think defensively he looks like the old Addison Russell, but I think it's taking some time right now. He's not playing every day, which is a bit of a different thing for him at this level. The good thing is this is runs per game wise the best offense in the National League, so they've been able to get past the Hayward slump. You know, Addison hasn't done a whole lot offensively. So I think they're just going to give him time. And I go back to catching the ball. If you do that, you're going to find a way in Joe Maddon's lineup.
Len, we appreciate you joining us. I know you've got to get out and around with a ton of things to do, all of your various and sundry pregame activities. We are not going to keep you. Thank you.
I'm going to dive into this.
You should.
Oh, my God.
Egg thing over here.
Yes. Grabbing, right. There's a ton of it there, and he cooked for like 20 people. He went out and he counted. He's like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 people are eating, and then he brings like a hotel pan full of this stuff.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Len Casper.
Thanks, guys.
Brought to you by the Chicago Bears. See past, meet present at Bears 100 Celebration Weekend, June 7th through 9th in Rosemont. Don't miss out on players like Tariq Cohen, Kyle Long, Eddie Jackson, and more on stage with your favorite Bears alumni with free autographs, photo ops, one-of-a-kind panels. Bears 100 Celebration Weekend is the place to be June 7th through 9th. Visit ChicagoBears.com for tickets. When we come back...
Yeah.
Cole Hamill's cousin is going to join us.
Don't call him that. Like to call. His name is Brandon Kinsler.
Oh, he is?
Yes.
You sure?
Okay. Call the man by his name.
Yeah, Brandon Kinsler is going to be our guest on Bernstein and McKnight. So don't go anywhere. You have the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
A smash caught by Kinsler. A line drive right back to the mound. Almost like there was a magnet in his glove.
Well, that's not legal. You can't be out there with glove magnets.
I don't think he actually had a glove magnet.
Okay, because they don't.
We should check though.
Yeah, we should ask him because Brandon Kinsler is joining us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. The Bernstein and McKnight Show. Talk with one of our favorite guys. What's going on, Brandon? How are you?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful. If you did have a glove magnet, how would you hide it in the glove and where?
It's just called great hands, really. It's not just a glove magnet. I'm an amazing athlete, so.
Of course. What was I thinking?
No, I don't know where I would hide it. I don't think I need a. I don't need a glove magnet.
Nah. But how in this day and age, in this MLB game, how does a sinker baller live? How do you know that? It's more likely that that ball is going to be where the barrels are more often than not. When everybody's throwing high fastballs, how do you make sure that you don't put pitches in harm's way?
Well, one, you got to be really in tune with your mechanics, and you just kind of got to learn know everyone's strengths and their swings. Everyone's trying to hit the ball in the air, so they're swinging up. If I can make a ball go down, it's a round bat, round ball, and. I'm willing to take my chances, but my main concern is I got to make sure the ball's down. And, you know, there's a lot of, if my ball's heavy going down and their bats are trying to go up, I think the odds are in my favor.
Is there an element as a reliever who throws that kind of stuff where you can overthrow the sinker? I remember when Brandon Webb was doing his thing and Dan Heron was doing his thing that they could get early in the game, you could kind of get to them because they were throwing hard enough that the sinker wasn't kind of like taking that bite. Is that a factor for you when you come out of the bullpen?
100%. Sometimes when you're too fresh, you throw right through the sink. Sometimes when you're too tired, you have to overthrow, and the ball just doesn't spin right. You can't get the right extension. There's just a happy medium there, and you just got to really know what you're feeling like that day. Sometimes you're like, well, my sinker's probably going to be spinning too much, so I'm going to go with more changeups today to at least make it look like a fastball, and hopefully it's 6 miles an hour slower.
Your changeup usage is way up, and at certain times in your career, you've had seasons where your changeup usage percentage has just been higher. What's the correlation there? Why is it some years, is it just feel? Is it just something that works for you in a given year, you stick with it?
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes you feel really good with your mechanics. I think in 2011, I started coming out with a new changeup that I just loved, and I was getting a lot of strikeouts on. And then I lost that feel for that pitch for probably a couple of years, and I just didn't feel like I didn't have it. All I had was a fastball. And I don't know, was with or new mechanics that Tommy gave me this spring training. I'm able to repeat, and it feels comfortable, the throw. I could throw the heck out of it. My arm speed's really good, and the action's really good. And the fact that I'm getting righties to swing over the top of it just makes me real confident. And it takes just the pressure off of my fastball. I don't have to be perfect with it. Because normally, you know, over the last couple of years, I was really, really fastball heavy. So obviously in the scouting reports, everyone's going to look fastball. And if I could throw that changeup in that same spot, then, you know, I can get a lot of quick outs.
Talk with Cubs reliever Brandon Kinsler here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You mentioned, Brandon, the new mechanics that you're working with. Tell me about the back and forth between you and Tommy Hotovy over the offseason to get your mechanics where they are now.
Well, he wanted to – I knew he was coming to town for the winter meetings, and we had a good relationship when I was first got here last year. Obviously, I was looking to talk to anybody that was willing to listen to me, so he was in the computer room, so he might as well listen to me. And then when I congratulated him, he got the job, and I said, well, if you want, I'll be playing catch if you're out in the winter meetings. He said, yeah, I'll come out there, and I didn't think he was serious. So, you know, he just came out to get in my environment, my natural environment, see what I was like and, you know, how I play catch and how I move as an athlete. You know, I think he had pretty good ideas. And then we show up to spring training. He's like, no, I saw how you're playing catch, you know, at that soccer field that one day. This is my kind of idea how I think would work for you. And I wasn't really on board with it at first because it was pretty uncomfortable. But then I was having a frustrating spring training, and I was just over it. I was over searching, and then he's like, well, why don't we just try this? And I was like, you know, I'll do whatever. And then that next outing, I think I gained like 3 inches of sink, and I couldn't really control it yet. So next outing, it just kept getting better and better, and I felt really confident with it. And then I didn't have to think about it anymore. I was just really aggressive, and finally I had to think about mechanics, and, you know, I've just been running with it ever since.
Is it common for a pitching coach to come search out a guy like that?
I think he knew that, you know, I was an all-star and there was a lot of potential and I can help. And he was, you know, I think he had good ideas last year, but it wasn't his job to bring him up, you know. And I think he just saw something. And the fact that he was willing to seek out, you know, obviously I'm going to be here anyways. He might as well try to help me. So
we've been told, per a Mark Gonzalez report, the Cubs' first road trip theme this season is going to be basketball. So after Sunday, when you leave for Houston, there are going to be basketball jerseys. Which one did you get, or are you preparing to wear?
I got Jason Williams. I'm going to be white chocolate. You know, I figured C-Sheck knows that I could outball him, so long as I wanted to wear white chocolate.
How short will the shorts be?
I don't know. I told them to order me short shorts, and I didn't get any shorts, so either I'm going to have to go with baggy style, old school way, like Jason Williams, or I'm going to be wearing some ridiculously short shorts. We got to show
the quads. See, I figured you for a short shorts guy. You got to show off the quads, the man. There's work done there.
The jersey's so big, though.
You could do cutoffs.
I could. We're going to have tearaway pants. That's going to be interesting.
Like and one tearaway pants? I go real 90s with
yeah,
it?
I think Nike sent them to us. So that would be fun.
My theory is all pants are tear away if you pull hard enough.
You want it bad?
It's a matter of want to at that point. So you mentioned C-Shack. Now that you've been here a while, is that your guy?
Yeah, we're throwing partners, and he takes the crap that I like to talk to him. So we have a good relationship. It's kind of like me and Doolittle in Washington. We were pretty good buddies, but talked a lot of crap back and forth. It helps a day go by. I mean, every day is so repetitive. You got to talk crap to somebody. So me and him just give it back and forth.
Balking? Is Doolittle balking?
No, he's not balking.
Okay. I mean, the whole thing kind of seems ridiculous. I'm on Doolittle's side of it, that everybody he brought up, Carl Edwards, Kenley Jansen, I think he mentioned a third or fourth name in there, that it should all be legal. Is that where you guys are mostly at as pitchers?
Yeah, I mean, nobody's on. I mean, you could quick pitch. You can do anything with nobody on. I mean, why not if you need a toe tap or whatever? I mean, I could see Joe's side. Joe, you know, they made Carl Edwards change his delivery, and they made another guy in Seattle change it. And if their closer's out there and he's doing the same thing, why not make him try change it up, see what happens? But obviously it didn't work at the time, but, I mean, I could see Joe's side of that.
We were reading a piece earlier before the show. We're going to get into it a bit later at 5:38 about just how nasty MLB curves and sliders have become, and just how many pitches have become self-invented and coached and created because of the cameras, because of technology, because of what you can see under the measurement of spin rate, all the Edgertronic, Rapsodo, Kinetrax, all of it. Could you have you thought about, outside of just your change up and stuff that Hadavi might notice, of really getting in the lab and maximizing some of this stuff, or are you already doing it?
No, I think for me, I'm just the old school way. I'm more about feel, and I feel like the hitters will let me know. Sometimes when I have a really good low spin rate on a sinker, it really I'll look at it and I'm like, I don't like the movement on that. It doesn't look good. And then all of a sudden I'll throw a kind of a high spin rate sinker and I have really good movement. But it's all my extension. If my extension numbers are good, and that's why Tommy changed my mechanics, because my extension numbers were short and my release height was too high. So obviously my arm slide was too high. So for me, I can't really go invent the wheel for me. It's too late. I can't, like, my pitches are my pitches. It's just a matter of my arm at my body being in the right slot. I think guys that throw 98 and they throw those high four-seamers and, you know, if they can spin the ball like that and they can go look at cameras and figure out new ways, then more power to them. But for me, I think that's just I missed that boat.
Are there new tricks, though, to be learned in how you read hitters? I don't know if you remember this, Brandon, but we were out at the Budweiser Brick House. It was the two of us and Cole Hamels, you, and Jesse Chavez.
Yeah, that's right. What he said. Somebody thought he was Cole Hamels' cousin.
Yeah, right. That was an unfortunate mistake by some Cubs fans there. I didn't want to have to make Brandon revisit that, but I guess. Anyway,
put me in the will. It's all good.
Well, that'll work out. Anyway, Chavez is talking about how he reads hitters and guys' feet and guys' swings, and that dictated the next pitch for him as much as anything else. It seems that seems so old school, but so right. I wonder if there are new ways that you've learned how to read hitters, like new innovations in what they're doing and how to read them.
No, I mean, I learned old school way too. Read hitter swings. Read it as the at-bat's going on. The hitter will tell you. My best scouting report here is I get to watch Hendricks throw against the lineup the whole game, and he'll tell me how I can get guys out, really. Because he could backdoor sinkers, and he goes in, and he does the changeup, so he's telling me the whole time. I go looking past history that I have with hitters, but the swing path of a hitter will let you know everything. I don't think there's any other special way of reading a guy. His swing is his swing. He can only hit certain kinds of pitches.
So during a game, Hendricks, or is it after a given at bat? Is it when he comes back to the dugout? How does that communication with Hendricks occur?
No, I'm just watching him the whole time. Every time he starts, I'm watching everything he's doing, and he's just it shows me the whole time. That's why I'm trying to tell our bullpen guys. We have three left-handed starters. If our left-handed relievers can watch how these left-handed starters get guys out, they're telling you for six innings how you can get this guy out. I mean, it's a really – you might as well. It's just it's an easy lesson to learn as a young guy and then just take advantage of it. Lefties these days that come in for one lefty, you get to sit around all day and – a left-handed starter is going to show you for 3 hours how to get the guy out, so this should be to your advantage.
Brandon, I know you came here last season, but it's kind of a weird question. It's been in the back of my mind for a while. Are the relievers for the Cubs set now? Are you comfortable now being in a bullpen that's kind of closed off from the rest of the world? It seems still strange to me to not see guys warming up live and kind of on the field, or even like in a bullpen where you can see into it like you can in a lot of other parks.
Yeah, it was different when I first got here last year. It was different warming up. Even when we first got here for the season, when you're playing catch in there, it's like, man, this is just weird. I think Wick said that yesterday, playing catch. It is different, but, you know, sometimes you get on the road and the bullpens and everyone's just bugging you the whole time. You're just like, man, I wish we could just disappear. So it is to our advantage at some point. And you can have great conversations in there and not be interrupted. So I think it, even though no one gets to see us, but for the bullpen-wise, it is a great advantage for us.
Have you ever had a teammate just say, like, dude, stop talking to me? Like, because, yeah, some guys, I mean, because I've
gotten that says that
before.
Every day.
See, because I'm like you are, that whether, you know, when you're sitting at, you know, your kid's game or you're waiting, you know, just generally I'm more comfortable if I'm talking to somebody. Yes. And it's just kind of the way people are wired. And I've had people say, yeah, like, could you like, go over there for a while?
Well, no one tells me that, but we'll tell some fans that if we're on the road sometimes, you're like, can you just leave us alone, please? But I think C-Shack gets annoyed at me every day, but, you know, he's a good sport.
Brandon, awesome talking with you, man. Appreciate the time. Best of luck next time out.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That is the always affable Brandon Kinstler of the Chicago Cubs joining us on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. It is starting to fill in here at Smoke Daddy, and I believe we have officially reached the halfway point of our breakfast dish.
I think we're a little past
the halfway.
You think
so? You think Lenny got us just past
half? Just past, yeah. He took the doggy bag out of the – yeah, I think we just got past.
If very I'm not allowed to be there to help out, then you guys need to step up and make that happen.
It's a fair point, Rick. It's a fair point.
Is this coconut cream pie or banana cream pie?
Couldn't tell you. We'll find out in just a couple of minutes. Key lime, maybe?
Nah. Oh, it might be.
Could be a key lime.
Boy, you guys are really graham cracker hate crust. You right now.
I'm going out of my way to do that, Rick. They also, by the way, here at Smoke Daddy, have what they call bottomless family-style brunch. That's when you and your family show up without pants.
No bottoms.
Nope. It's every Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., bottomless mimosas and Bloody Marys.
Sorry?
Yes, bottomless. That means
both?
All you can drink, mimosas and Bloody Marys.
I was at one of those once, and I was told, sir, it's time for you to leave.
And you may never again return.
It's another place I'm banned for life.
Yeah, the Essen House and wherever that was. But yeah, they get really cool things here at Smoke Daddy. We're broadcasting from Smoke Daddy. Come say hi. It's a long weekend. It's a fun weekend. It could be a rainy off and on weekend. So get it started now. Come on out. Grab a beer and grab some barbecue and come talk with us, because we have the midway coming up in a bit. It was a follow-up to a story that we did.
Love follow-ups.
About a new condiment that came out and an unexpected twist in the rollout of a new condiment. I also have a human endeavor that has to stop. It's got to stop. It is a famous human challenge, an achievement on this planet that we need to curtail significantly, because it's getting really dumb and deadly.
I have the most terrifying break-in you have ever heard about, plus a Florida story. The Midday Midway's on the way. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Midday Midway brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall, as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. We've been broadcasting from Smoke Daddy ahead of today's Cubs game. It's right across the street from Gallagher Way, so you should come here and join us and hang out and eat and party and start your long weekend. We talked Cubs. We talked to Len Casper. We talked a little White Sox, too, about the performance of Lucas Giolito. Pretty special stuff. And Brandon Kinstler joined us. He's always fun to have on.
Let me tell you a little story here to start off the Midday Midway. For a 1990 show at Washington, D.C.'s famed 930 Club, late Nirvana frontman Kurt Cobain wound up scrawling his set list on the back of a pizza plate, off of which he'd just finished eating a slice of pizza. Now, almost 30 years later, that plate has sold at auction.
What?
Start thinking about dollar values in your head. California auction house Julian's Auctions came into possession of the rare paper plate, which predates the band's meteoric rise to global stardom by about a year, through another musician who played for an opening act that night. Think about that. You're just opening for Nirvana before they're really Nirvana, and you snag Kurt Cobain's pizza plate on which he had written a set list. It's a little like the Dan McNeil story he tells about Mike Greenberg taking
the Bob Costas plastic spoon
from Bob Costas as a souvenir.
Yeah, but the way things go now, a lot of these stories that we do, where some geneticist will end up creating a Cobain clone out of some found bit of saliva on there.
Yeah, that's probably where we're headed. Right. It's the end of the world. The auction house initially valued the plate at about $1,000 to $2,000. It sold at auction just this week for $22,000.
Oh, come on.
$22,000 for a paper plate with a set list on it and some of Kurt Cobain's saliva.
I saw this picture and I didn't believe it. I thought it was faked. I thought it was photoshopped. The line of people waiting to ascend the summit of Mount Everest. Have you seen this particular photo?
I have. I saw it this morning on the ride in. I wanted to do this in the midway myself. It is atrocious.
Yeah, and it's real. Three more climbers have died on Mount Everest, taking the death toll to 7 in a week, more than the total for the whole of last year. The three died of exhaustion while descending on Thursday. It comes amid traffic jams near the summit. As record numbers make the ascent, despite calls to limit the number of climbing permits, Nepal has issued 381 permits at $11,000 each for the spring climbing season. Two Indian climbers died while scaling back down the mountain on Thursday. They are stuck in the traffic. Nigal Bhagwan, 27, was stuck in the traffic for more than 12 hours and died of exhaustion because there's no oxygen up there.
Yeah, it's a problem.
You can't just stand around and wait. Conditions have been worse than usual. High winds are leaving a large number of climbers a narrow time frame to reach the summit. The number of people climbing Everest in 2019 could exceed last year's record of 807 people reaching the summit, and there are calls now to limit permits. Here's the deal. Anybody can climb Everest if you have enough money. You can literally be carried up the mountain by Sherpas if you have enough money.
You can.
It is not a big deal. I know, yeah, Bruce, you say it's just it's not remarkable anymore because of how it's done. It also, what's the calculus here? Risking death to do something increasingly common. This line looks like they're waiting to get into Space Mountain. I mean, it literally looks like an amusement park. And what's the accomplishment now? You're not Sir Edmund Hillary. You're not Tenzing Norgay. You are just another person, another statistic paying a fee to do something a ton of people have done, and you might die doing it, and nobody thinks it's that big a deal anymore.
Well, that's the issue here, is that you're summiting something that is unique in this world and on this planet. There is an achievement in getting up and getting back down, but anymore the achievement has become making it out of a death trap that's created by the very people that are looking to conquer the thing.
And it's also stupid. Apparently gross. Apparently it is dirty. It's just littered with human waste and oxygen tanks and the bones of dead climbers. That the whole thing, there's no like outdoorsy romance to it.
Some of that is unavoidable. I mean, you're going to have, whether it's the expeditions that started in the 50s all the way up until now, like, there isn't a practical way to go clean up the stuff you have to discard on the way out. There's just no way to do it.
And it was another story I was going to do, that even in the other direction, from the highest point on Earth to the lowest in the Mariana Trench.
Yeah, saw this.
They went down there with a new submersible, and they found candy wrappers. So there's all this disgusting filth in the tourist attraction that is the highest point on Earth, and they sent a submersible. They went to the bottom of the planet, the lowest point, and they found plastic candy wrappers.
So screwed. This from Palm Bay, Florida. There is a Checkers there. Remember we talked about Checkers, yes, and rallies a few months ago. I guess they're kind of the same thing. This, though, not so great. WESH2, it's the news station down there in Orlando, had reported, it's one of those, you know, man goes into restaurant, does undercover kind of video thing, finds the health issues, the health code violations. This, though, recorded by the actual Department of Health in Florida. Here's just a couple of things at this Florida Checkers. An accumulation of dead or trapped birds, insects, rodents, and other pests in control devices. Large amount of dead flying insects and light trap over bag in box of soda. Floor areas covered with standing water throughout kitchen and under drink machines, sinks, and by the ice machine. Presence of insects, rodents, or other pests. Multiple dead love bugs in tray where wrapped straws and sauces are stored at the drive-thru and front service windows.
Love bugs.
Yeah.
That's like an invasive beetle where
I think it's shaped like a heart. I think that's how it
No, I think it's in, no? in mating season. They like fly around in the air while they're doing each other.
Maybe. Rodent activity present is evidenced by droppings and found some of the base of the soda machine in the tubes behind the shake machine, under the shelf by the cash register, everywhere. Oh, and by the way, They were only bringing the hamburgers and hamburger buns up to 125 degrees.
Not hot enough.
Which, as a cook, you know is death.
That's not hot enough. Do you remember when I told you about the rollout of Heinz Mayo Chup?
Yeah.
Remember Mayo Chup?
It's the on-the-shelf mayo ketchup combo.
Correct. Some people refer to it as fry sauce, I guess, because they dip their fries in it.
Or
I want to dip my fries in it. Yeah, I'm not there. I'm not a big enough fan of that combination to want to purchase Mayo Chup. I understand the idea of Dijonnaise making a little bit more sense, but Mayo Chup was a thing, and one of the places it was marketed was in Canada, and it became a thing that they did not expect.
Ah.
Because people, some in Canada, speak Cree. And in some Cree dialects, according to linguists and Cree speakers...
What is Cree?
Cree. It's a native Canadian tribe.
Is it? Okay, great.
In some areas, cool. You probably, in northern Wisconsin, in Hayward, there have been... some Cree descendants, Ojibwe and Cree are the two two major tribes that are still extant in Ontario. And I know that a lot of the fishing guides at some of the lodges were Cree. So I probably have heard Cree spoken, and it probably was saying, "God, these clients are so annoying. I'm going to cut up their damn walleye. They see snags 15 times. I got to keep reversing the boats." I probably heard that in Cree. But Arden Ogg is the director of the Cree Literacy Network. And the name Mayo Chup in Cree, how do I say this? It is the same two words as a term for extreme drunkenness, blank face. And he describes it as the very vulgar English idiom for extreme drunkenness. And around the area that they call Moose Factory is, which actually sounds like a children's show from the 1970s.
I was Mayo Chup in Moose Factory the other night.
Yeah, you're in Moose Factory. Dude, I was so Mayo Chup.
Only one way to do Moose Factory, I tell you that much.
Yeah, I had a bunch of Molsons, got totally Mayo Chup. But the company has heard of the translation now. They say it's unfortunate. They say the only thing we want our consumers, whatever dialect of Cree they speak, to have on their faces is our newest condiment mashup. So there's not much they can do about it at this point. They're not going to change the name. But Cree is the most widely spoken indigenous language in Canada with 96,575 speakers, heavily concentrated in the prairies.
That's a lot of people.
So they...
isn't Canada a fries in mayo country?
Well, they're fries, so that's why they market it there. Their fry sauce can also be a combination of these condiments. Mm. But that's... You get about 100,000 people there that are... Or feeling a little differently about Mayo Chup.
Or using it for something that it was not intended for. No, it won't do that for you, sir. Tell me this doesn't sound like the start of a horror movie to you.
Okay.
A Boston-area man came home from work with his son to find something amiss. He thought maybe they'd been robbed, but upon further inspection, he discovered that nothing was missing, and his home was sparkling clean. Nate Roman lives in a single-family home in Marlborough, Massachusetts, and he told CNN he left for work May 15th, came home after picking his son up to find the door was unlocked. Dad, the door is unlocked, which he's done every once in a while, doesn't think anything of it. Went through the house and immediately realized that something was real messed up. He realized that someone may have been inside his home because the door he normally keeps open was firmly shut. Went upstairs to check the rest of the house and discovered his son's room, which was a wreck when they left that morning, was neat as a pin.
What?
He found his
room. How old is his son?
He found his own room. Well, the son was with him. He found his own room in the same pristine condition. Rugs were vacuumed. Everything was neat and put away. They had made one of those, I don't know what you call it, but when the toilet paper gets wrapped up and then they fold a rose onto the top of the toilet paper, that was done. No mints on the pillows. There was no security system set, so the cameras couldn't find him. The alarm didn't even go off when the guy got through there. That is the because it starts like, oh, the house got clean. And then it's like, oh, now he's waiting in the closet watching us, you know, unfurl the toilet paper rose
right,
or something.
That is
the beginning of a very horrific movie.
Or he's installed malware on something and he's tracking your keystrokes. I mean, once you feel kind of violated to that extent, you know, you wonder what else has gone on.
With sell somebody, the house.
Right?
I can't be there anymore. Roman is hoping to move past the ordeal, but he kept the toilet paper rose as a souvenir.
But I had my my first apartment in Chicago was burglarized because, you know, it was just somebody just sort of ripped the screen off and went in. I didn't have any assets worth taking. So they took a couple of CDs off the CD tower and my fitted Yankees hat. And that was it. And I believe at the time, Jonathan Hood said, "Why did LL Cool J break into your apartment?" We couldn't figure out what happened. But that was, it was kind of like, okay, you fix the screen, you get out of your life. The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. We have the opportunity to have a baseball conversation with Jonah Carey as we do every Friday at 11, and that comes your way in moments. So keep it here. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.